This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It's time for our player spotlight, everybody. We do it every day here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Pleasure to bring to the program for the first time this season, place kicker Jason Myers is with us. Jason, how are you, man?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're good. I'm curious from, you obviously play such a unique position and things change depending on elements and all that good stuff. But I'm just curious about awareness. You're on the field. We're watching a TV broadcast. We're hearing announcers and, you know, people buy into the jinx. Don't ever talk about a no-hitter. Don't ever talk about a streak. And you had a streak going of made, you know, consecutive field goals going through last season. You didn't miss. It was going into this season. Is that something you think about at all? Is that even entering your mind on the field? Because it's obviously a huge topic with the commentators on TV, and maybe you hear it if you go back and watch game tape. But is that something that's on your mind as you're running out there on the field?
Not really. I have a routine that I run through really for every kick. So, you know, that's the last thing on my mind. Even when I go back and watch it, I don't really watch it with the sound on. So, you see people talk about it, but that's definitely not something on my mind for each kick.
Yeah, so 37 in a row. Congratulations, by the way, and it's been fun watching you. But is it top five as far as streaks go in NFL history, I think?
Not quite sure where it finished up, but somewhere up there, yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of stuff, you truly are able to block that out. So you're not thinking at all that you haven't missed an entire season. And when you go out there, there's such a routine you have set that it just eliminates any of pressure or anything like that.
Yeah, that's the goal of my routine is to not really think about the situation, whether it's, you know, like last week a game tying kick or, last year, early this year with the streak. Your mind's just on making that kick that, you know, is in front of you because, you know, as we all know, it's the NFL and it's being a kicker in the NFL is they don't care how long your streak is. If you miss one or two, that's on you. So, you know, the goal is just to make the kick in front of you, and that's kind of what my routine sets up for me.
Hey, we always see you guys out there, you know, very early pregame working, you know, just looking at conditions and practicing and things like that. But very often conditions will change. I almost picture you with a weather app or something looking at wind direction throughout the game. Do you have somebody that's relaying information like, hey, this thing was blowing hard left or right early, but now that it's changed and it's blowing this direct? Do you have sort of updates on just how the weather's going?
I wish. we keep track of it all week, up until we arrive at the stadium because it's always switching. And, the weather apps aren't always 100% correct. So, you know, in the end of the day, it's, you know, our job to figure out what the wind's doing because a lot of times in these stadiums, you know, up top will be going one way, on the field will be going another way just because it gets in there and swirls around. So, it's our job to, figure out what's happening with the ball and just, go from there.
Is there something tricky about the north end at Lumen Field, as far as the wind? It seems like there's lots of misses on that side, usually the visiting field goal kickers. But is there something different about north versus south in the stadium?
It's just more open, lets more wind in and then swirls around. Seattle's not the easiest place to kick, but, it's just that heavy, wet Pacific Northwest air. But, it's just a little bit more open there. So, but there's, that's like every stadium has an open end. Steelers had an open end. Everywhere kind of has that open end that lets some wind in. So just kind of going out there and deciding what's going on and figure it out.
Yeah, do you have a stadium that you look forward to? You're like, I just kick well. I love the surface. I love the conditions. And maybe one on the other side where you're like, oh, man, I don't want to be in this stadium. I hate kicking there.
I'll take a plane indoors any day for a specialist that takes out half of the, the effect of the ball. But, I enjoy, tough weather conditions. I always have. So, I think that's something that benefits me and has my whole career. So.
Jason, pretty nice tackle the other night. I know you don't want to make tackles, but do you take pride in that?
Yeah, you know, I take pride in, you know, being there and, you know, not being a guy that, you know, kind of lets them through and not being part of the kickoff team. You know, I definitely don't hit as much as everyone else, so I feel a little more sore after just one tackle than some guys. But, yeah, I definitely pride myself in not letting anyone get through if they do break one.
I don't know, Dave. Maybe he does want to make a tackle. Maybe he wants to throw a hit on somebody every once in a while.
Yeah.
Is that something? Do you ever even work on that? Is there ever even, you know, we've been out there during practice and we don't see anything but kicks happening. Is there ever, hey, we're going to spend 5 minutes just working on form, you know, working on your tackling form just in case you have to do it?
No, I don't remember last time I worked on that. Yeah. You know, I just kind of, going back to my old soccer days, I kind of, you know, have learned angles pretty well, so that kind of helps me out, and I just, you know, just kind of hang on and just try to get the guy down. So
pretty good group that you got there, and I know that, you know, Tyler Ott and Michael Dixon and you, probably pretty tight group, and you know, and I always thought it would be a bummer if one guy was a jerk, and you know, because you guys have to hang out all the time. But it seems like you got a really good thing going on, and you got, you know, Tyler was an Pro Bowler last year, and you know, so you know, it seems like a good group that you guys have. Then you guys probably spend a ton of time together.
Yeah, we spend a ton of time together. You know, we're great friends on and off the field, so it makes it very easy to come into work, to travel. You know, we're always working on things together. You know, we're all very comfortable with each other, so it makes it very easy to come in every week, every day, and get after it.
You know, what's interesting is you look at other position groups. Obviously, if you're a linebacker, defensive lineman, offensive lineman, you got a group of guys you can go talk to about, man, I can't believe you see what happened on this play. You see what happened on this play. You've just got Dixon. He's the only other guy that the ball touches his foot on purpose. So it's, you know, and you do it differently. Is it hard to relate to each other's issues if you're talking to them about, man, the wind, or oh man, I didn't hit it clean or whatever? It seems a little limiting, I guess, whereas everybody else has a bunch of guys they can talk to.
Not necessarily. You know, we're both trying to figure out the wind. We're both, you know, we talk so much about parts of our swing or the mentality of things so much that it's all very similar. You know, the swing may be a little different, but everything else besides that is very similar. The contact, you know, the tempo and rhythm, and just, you know, with the hold and everything. So it's actually a lot more similar than most would think. So,
hey, Jason, how's your golf game? Most kickers have a good golf game. How's yours?
Definitely goes way downhill during the season. I put them away once camp starts. So, try and sneak one in or two during the bye week, but other than that, it's not until season's over when I get back home to San Diego that the clubs come back out. So definitely take a 6-month hit on the golf game during season.
Yeah. Does that help you? I mean, the fact that you are so precise of exactly, you know, where you kick the ball and all of that, does that help you, or does golf help you as far as being a kicker?
Yeah, it definitely helps. You know, just kind of helps me stay busy in the off season too, but you know, kind of getting that routine and just a little mental side of things in the off season. Yeah. It just keeps me busy, really. I just love, you know, doing something that is a challenge, so that's fun for me.
So when your game is really rolling, are you shooting in the 70s, 80s? Where's your game at?
Yeah, I'm like mid-70s, towards the end of summer.
Wow. Who's the best golfer on this team? Is it you?
I would think so. Disley's been playing a lot lately. Ott's pretty good. I think a couple other guys are getting in. Colby's getting into it. But I think I would hold on still for that one.
Who do you – I've mentioned that you're hanging out with Ott and Michael Dixon quite a bit. But who are some of the position players, guys that you hang out with?
Disley, Colby, Ballor, you know, just – you know, special teams guys a lot. You know, they're always in the meetings together. So, yeah, good group here. Just, you know, great families, and it's, you know, it's easy to hang out outside of the facility as well.
Well, Jason, we always appreciate you taking a few minutes with us. I'm glad we were able to catch up with you, and we wish you the best coming up Monday night football at Lumen Field against the Saints. Best of luck there, and we'll look forward to talking to you again.
All right, appreciate it, guys.
There you go. Jason Myers, part of our player spotlight that we do every day here with Wyman and Bob. And every Tuesday, we speak with this guy, El Hombre.
Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What? El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
Every Tuesday, you look forward to the appearance of this guy who joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, the one, the only, El Hombre. Michael Bradley's here. What's going on, man?
Get any hockey scores lately?
What, are you trying to rub in the Flyers score? You bunch of cheating donkeys out there. You cheated, clearly.
Oh, what do you mean cheating? Because they got in some fights. That's hockey.
Hey, you know what's funny is that, oh no, actually we've enjoyed it. We've been getting a kick out of the Kraken so far, and the game they've got going on right now, there's already been multiple fights. The first game there wasn't even a shoving match, and since then we've seen multiple. I don't know if they're more aggressive than other teams. Is how do they look to you? You're a hockey guy.
Old-time hockey. By the way, the headline in the Philadelphia Inquirer today was a good one. Kraken get a smackin'.
I would say they were 1-1 in the fights yesterday.
Yeah, you're right. They won the first. The second one, that guy came through pretty well. A lot of body blows there. But, no, I mean, look, when you're an expansion team, you really have no identity. It's not like you can fall back on years of saying, we play Rangers hockey here. You know, What's Kraken hockey? You've got two games worth. So, you know, you're going to be a little scrappier. You got a bunch of guys who are all trying to impress a coach. None of them knows really any of each other. None of them knows the identity that, you know, the team has or their place in the team. So, sure, you know, last night I think the first period nobody hit anybody, and then the second, third period, that's all they did.
Old-time hockey, Eddie Shore.
Yeah, well done. Well, I'm putting a foil on.
Yeah.
You guys can watch Slapshot and really enjoy it now that you've got a cracking team there. And I like your secondary logo. I don't understand the anchor with the giant squid, but hey, it looks nice, so I might even get a hat.
Everybody loves. I saw who
Maritime
was it? Buchagross on ESPN saying that their merchandise sales are through the roof. He was talking about all the money the league lost, obviously, last year with the COVID situation, and saying they are single-handedly putting money in the pockets of the owners out there with their merchandise sales.
Well, I mean, look, first of all, hockey swag's the best stuff out there. Okay, that's the one thing you got to remember, that they are, you know, hockey sweaters are great. And then, you know, the logos are good. And so the Kraken have a good one. I mean, it's good colors. They've got, you know, thrown black and sort of that aqua or turquoise, whatever they want to call it, Kraken blue or whatever they call it there. So it's good stuff, and people want to buy because it's a new team, and they're, you know, that's my second team now. I'm gonna be a crackhead.
Sweet, love it, man. I think my favorite line is, "Where are you boys from? The Iron League? Many fights down there? Nah."
Yeah, right.
They get out on the ice. But, you know, we were just watching the, you know, and Bob has been breaking down because of his karate background. He's breaking down all of the jiu-jitsu moves. But it's pretty impressive. You look at what they're doing and all the – I mean, just the fact that they're on skates. I mean, and we were kind of speculating as to, you know, do they have – like, they should bring a guy like Bob in, right, where it's like, you know, when you get in these fights, we just watched a huge one.
Yeah.
And then they're sitting next to each other in the
penalty
box.
Boxes.
Yeah, yelling. Yapping at each other.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's great stuff. And the thing about it is that this is what hockey is. They settle their problems on the ice. If somebody takes a run at, you know, one of the second fight last night started because one of the Kraken players took a run at Couturier. Either was it Couturier or was it the other guy? I can't remember. But he took a run at one of the Flyers' better forwards, mm-hmm. And so you got to police that. So you go after him. It gets settled then, and the best is you build a little bit of a loathing there so that when they go out to play in Seattle, the fans will be all juiced up for it, and maybe we'll get some more fisticuffs. You know, people are like, oh, it's barbaric. I really don't think it is. I think it's great. Now, I mean, these guys who did nothing but fight, you know, you feel bad for guys who had, you know, CTE and everything because that's all they did. But, you know, a guy fights three or four times a year. It's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I think fans seem to like it. I mean, certainly new fans. We get a lot of people texting in. Oh, it's great to see that they've got some, you know, some fire to them and, you know, they're not getting shoved around. And I like that they do settle it out there. What I didn't understand is that some of these guys – you know, making basic mistakes, Michael, you don't ever take your eyes off your opponent, ever, because you can't respond to a punch you don't see. And I saw a guy just getting turning his head and just getting tuned up. I'm like, please, I understand punches are coming. Well, you don't want to get hit in the eye, but you've got to be able to react to what's coming.
Look, they do not do a lot of fight training, right? This is more of a deal of, and the best fight story I ever heard was Gordie Howe when he played for the Red Wings when he was in his prime. You know, he'd play those teams in the original six 20 times a year or something ridiculous like that. So one year the Montreal Canadiens, for a game against Detroit, brought up some goon from the juniors. And
was it Ogie Oglethorpe?
Oglethorpe.
Oglethorpe?
No, Oglethorpe.
That's the way he said it, Oglethorpe. And then Captain Hook.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they go into the boards, this big guy and Howe, and of course the elbows come up. And the next thing you know, they're squared off, and the guy's got his gloves dropped, and he's ready to go after Howe. And Howe looks at him and goes, come on, kid, this is the NHL. We don't fight here. We just wrestle around till they break us up. And the guy drops his hands, and Howe just hits him with a straight right in the face with one punch. So, you know, these guys aren't out there sparring and hitting the heavy bag or whatever. They just throw punches until they fall down and get tired, and then the refs come. And it's best when they – have you guys seen a goalie fight? That's the best. When everybody fights and the two goalies are like, well, looks like we got to fight too.
Oh, is that how it goes? So if it's a big scrum, the goalies just go seek each other out?
If it's a brawl and everybody on the ice is squared off, the goalies skate toward each other, sort of like saying, oh, crap, now we got to do this.
It's like the relievers coming out of the bullpen.
You know, yeah, right. The guys running in to end up on the periphery of the struggle in the middle of the diamond.
Hey, I've always thought that when the guys come pouring in out of the bullpen, sometimes they're next to each other. They should just jump, you know. I would just jump a guy right there.
Just attack each other before you get to where other fight is.
They should be fighting in the outfield. They shouldn't have to run all the way in. Because by the time they get in, everything's done. There should just be a rule. All right, you guys run 90 feet into the middle of the outfield and then have a pier six brawl out there. Because the thing is, the umpire and the security won't be able to get out there to break that one up.
So, Michael, what is happening with Ben Simmons out there? Bring me up to speed on this. Did he want to be traded and the Sixers want to keep him? Doc Rivers wants to keep him? Or I know he struggled. He doesn't want to shoot. He doesn't want to shoot free throws. He just – I don't know what he wants to do. But is it more about he wanted to leave and they wanted to keep him, or they tried to trade him and nobody wanted him? What led to this?
Okay, so here's the deal. They lose to the Atlanta Hawks in the playoffs. During the playoffs, he clearly was avoiding – any kind of situation where he might get fouled because his head was so messed up he couldn't make any free throws. Then in the final game against the Hawks, and you can look this up on the YouTube machine, he drives baseline and is literally at the basket. He's 6'10". He just goes up and dunks it. Nobody's really around him, but he's afraid that he's going to get hit when he dunks it and not make the dunk and have to shoot two free throws, so he passes the ball. So the fans went nuts on that. After the series, somebody asked Doc Rivers, can Simmons be a point guard on a championship team? And he said, I don't know the answer to that right now. That set Simmons off. Simmons was upset. Now, Simmons' agent is Rich Paul of Clutch Sports, who believes that he is really the commissioner of the NBA. And he made it clear that Simmons wanted to be traded. So the Sixers spent the whole summer trying to trade this guy, asking for like 9 first-round draft choices and a package of LeBron, Anthony Davis, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Luka Doncic. Of course, nobody was willing to give up anything like that, so they couldn't trade him. Simmons holds out the first part of training camp and gets fined $1 million. He finally says, this is ridiculous, I'm coming. He practices yesterday. Today, in the early on in the practice, Rivers asks him to join a defensive drill. He says no. Rivers throws him out of practice, suspends him for the first game, and that's that. So he wants to be traded. The team wants to trade him, but now they can't get anything for him because he's trying to pull what Harden pulled last year. Remember that? He showed up fat. Mm-hmm. Or at least looked like he was wearing a fat suit. He was going through layup lines, eating a turkey leg. So he was doing everything he could to get out of Houston, and he ended up in New Jersey. Simmons is trying to play from the same playbook, but people are saying, you're not James Harden. So the Sixers are having a tough time getting rid of him. Now he's completely torpedoing his spot within the team. Joel Embiid, his teammates say today, I don't really think about the guy. I don't care about the guy. So this is a big mess. I have no idea where it's going to go.
Wow.
Hey, Alombre, you paying attention to baseball of the four teams that are left? Who are you rooting for? Any rooting interest or just zero?
No, No, I hate all four teams. This is the worst. Throw the Yankees in there, and it's the only way it could be worse.
Wait, why do you hate Atlanta?
Because they're in the East.
Because they're in our division. Yeah. Can't like the Braves. You kidding me? I used to go to Braves games when Chipper Jones played and yell Larry at him because his first name's Larry. And, you know, we'd be sitting there, Larry, and then, you know, he hit a three-run homer. But
You really should root for the teams in your division. You really should.
No. I don't play that. Seriously, none of that.
He doesn't subscribe to that.
It makes you look better.
I hate them all. I mean, the Twins want to go. You know, I was rooting for the White Sox, like the Brewers. You know, benign Midwest teams, eh? But none of this Dodgers. I mean, I can't. Houston, really? The Red Sox. I'm paying so little attention to this.
Yeah, I can't bring myself to root for the Astros or the Red Sox. In that series, I guess I'm leaning toward the Red Sox, but it's a very marginal difference. Whoever comes out of the National League, that's who I'm pulling for.
I'm hoping that the season gets stopped by a wildcat strike by the players and we don't have a champion.
Just there is no World Series.
Yeah, exactly. The labor agreement expires like December 1st or November 30th at midnight or whatever. Let's hope there's the players say, that's it. We're gonna strike right now.
Is Jalen Hurts worse or better than you thought he would be by this point?
He's exactly what I thought he would be. Look, this is a guy who was told by a former SEC defensive coordinator who went against him. We never worried about him as a passer. We would spy him with a very good athlete and make sure that he didn't run for 200 yards against us. He's not an accurate passer. He doesn't have a strong arm. And he was drafted. People forget this. This guy was not drafted to be the next quarterback. Wentz still had a lot of time left on his contract. The idea was you bring him in and use him as Taysom Hill, as a situational guy because he's so dangerous with his legs. You're forcing the defense into a situation where they may have to change personnel or you get an advantage. Then all of a sudden Wentz stunk. He lost his mind because he was afraid Hurts was going to take his job, and now you neither have the coach nor the quarterback that you expected to have right now. The Eagles didn't expect to be without Wentz or Doug Peterson right now and have Mike Sirianni and Jalen Hurts. This is not the situation they wanted. It's a mess.
Before we let you go, Blessed by the Best, My Journey to Canton and Beyond, the book you wrote with Brian Dawkins. I see nothing but 5-star reviews on Amazon. How's it doing? Any updates on the sales?
As you should. We're doing well. Sales are going well. Brian is out on the circuit being interviewed all over the place. I think he's got 10 interviews this week. Everybody wants to talk to him. He's got an inspirational story. I interviewed him even for a local magazine last week, and it's just you can't come away from any time spent with this guy, whether in person, whether watching him on video, or whether reading what he has to say, without being inspired. He's overcome a lot. He's got a great attitude toward life, and as he says, his best sermon that he can give is the life that he lives. So you can read all about it in Blessed by the Best, My Journey to Canton and Beyond.
Available wherever books are sold, and perfect for the holidays. Perfect for the holidays.
Exactly.
And
you can follow now.
Yeah, you can follow Michael on Twitter, by the way, @DailyOmbre. @DailyOmbre is where you find him on Twitter. You can find the book wherever books are sold, and you can find him here next Tuesday. Michael, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
So long, suckers.
It was funny. We had Robert Turbin in last Tuesday, and he got his first exposure to El Hombre. He had that ending, you know, so long, suckers. He looked at me like,
whoa,
what was
his problem?
Yeah, he liked him, though. He's like, yeah, that guy's pretty funny. I liked him. And apparently Sirianni was a former coach of Turbin's.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, I was surprised he got that job. It was not a ringing endorsement. But all right, there you go. Coming up, the Saints defense is better than the Steelers. So how does that impact the Seahawks? We're going to talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to El Hombre, Michael Bradley, for joining us in the previous segment. You guys can text in throughout the show, 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. And it was when you were talking about karate or whatever, somebody texted in about When Dave says that, all I can picture is Kramer fighting kids in the dojo. Oh.
Hey, they're the same level.
He was dominating.
They're also green belts.
He was dominating till Elaine got there.
Yeah.
Straighten things out. Meanwhile, the Saints, we talked about this to open the show for those of you that were not present at that time, but you look at the Saints and you go category by category. This is at least through five games. They've played one fewer games. They had their bye week. Right. But through five games, they are second in the NFL in points allowed. They are second in terms of rushing yards allowed. They are fifth, I believe, in turnovers, plus five. And the one category you look at, you go, okay, they're not good, is through the air. They're pass defense. They're giving up, I think they're in the 20s somewhere. They give up like 200 and some yards per game. But that's sort of, I was telling you during the break, like, man, I wish that was reversed. I wish they were really, really good against the pass but terrible against the run, because I think that's what you need for Geno. You don't want to put it on his arm. You don't want to have him to be in a position to be passing us to victory. You know, if they could just hand the ball off and run it, and that's just the weakness of the Saints, that to me sets up perfectly when you've got a backup quarterback in there who's capable and he can make throws. We saw it, but you don't want to have to rely upon that to be the difference in the win or loss.
Yeah, and we'll get a clearer idea of like just how good that defense is as the week goes on. But, you know, I got to believe it's pretty legit because, you know, they played at Carolina, you know, and they won that or lost that one pretty handily. So, you know, Carolina was running the ball quite a bit. Sometimes it's a product of, you know, the other team's not running the ball, but I think it's pretty legit. They have a really good linebacker named Demario Davis, who I just love watching. He's kind of one of those underrated guys. So and that's the thing you get, right? Every week you get talent, you know. I'm sorry, what did I call it? Oh, Demario Davis. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I was looking at Deontay Harris, but you know, remember Alvin Kamara and how he chewed us up the last time
he
came up here.
I do recall him.
You get that too. So, but yeah, on defense they're pretty good, and I think it's legit. And like I mentioned, Davis, one of the best linebackers in the league. So it's going to be tough. But you're right. I don't know. I feel like Geno can handle anything. I'm actually more worried about the running game and repeating not exactly what they did, but be effective running the ball. I'm more worried about that than I am about Geno, because, you know, and we'll have to look at the injury report. I remember Damian Lewis left that game, was kind of banged up, and, you know, so we'll have to see. But the offensive line up until the other night in the second half, especially that drive that opened the second half, they were moving people off the ball.
How did you think Jamarco played? We saw him at the end of the game, and he and Shell got worked.
Yeah, they both got beat, but – you know, I remember keying in on him on a play, and he had a good block. So, I mean, yeah, I thought it was kind of hit or miss with him. And, you know, and then I always wonder what's going on with Dwayne Brown. Every once in a while, he'll get beat and then all of a sudden turn and get mad at somebody else.
Saw it again. He looked like he was lighting somebody up. I don't know who it was or what happened, but it looked like he thought it was somebody else's problem.
The only person it could have been was Travis Homer, who was the guy in the backfield, because – you know, he didn't give him a chip or something like that, or didn't give him. And it's one thing, you know, if to complain. I mean, if you're expecting that, if you're expecting a chip, you're going to block it a certain way. So, and if the guy just, you know, has the brain fart and doesn't do it, then yeah, I can see being irritated like that. But I think, you know, I'm not as sure. Like, I'm okay with how Geno's going to operate in the offense. I feel like he can pass when he needs to. Again, he had two really good passes that stood out to me. One was the touchdown to DK, and the other one was the one over the linebacker in the middle of the field. I just thought he executed that really well. Not great throwing on the run, but I feel pretty confident in him running that offense. I'm not confident about the consistency in the run game.
Well, we haven't seen it. They haven't given you a reason to be confident yet.
Yeah, that game a little bit, you know, and then you've seen things here and there from Carson, and you know, a really good run, and you saw that trap play that Alex Collins scored on against San Francisco. It's been hit or miss in there, but yeah, it was good. The good news is you have a guy. Alex Collins is a lot like Chris Carson, that he always finds a way to get positive yardage. I mean, if he's tackled at the line of scrimmage, it's like he'll get 2 yards. You know, he'll always moving forward. He's just very active, and his feet are great. So that's the good news. If they do get stuffed, it's not like he's a huge step down from Chris Carson or anything.
When are we going to see Eskridge?
Yeah, no kidding.
We forget about him. And And listen, Swain's done a nice job. You know, he hasn't got a ton of action, but he's gotten enough to make you feel, I feel fine when he's on the field, and I've got confidence if they're throwing the ball to him. But, you know, Eskridge was your first overall pick this year for your team. You only had three picks, so I put more value on him because you had just a precious few. So they couldn't really, let's take a flyer with this one. No, you've got an investment. There's a belief and an expectation attached to these picks. And Trey Brown, we saw a couple of moments that gave you a reason to be excited. Eskridge, we saw a little bit in the preseason. But, man, you just talk about starting out on the wrong foot with these guys, you know, with injuries. Trey Brown finally getting in. Eskridge, you know, unfortunately suffering that concussion after he was hurt during training camp and everything. We didn't see much of him in training camp. And he finally gets his shot during the regular season and suffers the concussion. So, I mean, I'm not looking to rush him back. That's not anything you mess around with. But we forget about him, or at least I do. I forget that he's part of the equation out there. Who could, you know, that jet sweep would have looked a lot better going with him rather than Gerald Everett to start the game.
Well, and he had two of those, right, in Indianapolis, I think, for a total of about 20 yards. And, you know, he beat Darius Leonard. And, look, he should because he's a scat back, but Darius Leonard's a really good linebacker, and he takes good angles and was not able to catch him. Yeah, it's worst concussion I've heard of. It didn't look that bad. And, you know, he even stayed home the first week. But they were going to use him, man. He was going to be part of it. And pretty cool that him and Trey Brown, you know, had he stayed healthy, he's two of the three draft choices are out there contributing as rookies. You know, Freddie Swain was really mad at T.J. Watt the other day when he was trying to punch the ball out. Yeah. Swain was, like, getting in T.J. Watt's face.
Good for him.
Yeah, I like
taking a guff off that guy.
It seems like there's a lot of love for Alex Collins.
Yeah.
You know, these guys like him. And, you know, you see it just how they interact on the sidelines. I remember in the preseason we interviewed Gabe Jackson, and he said something to Alex Collins, and then Alex said something to him, and he just was cracking up. And I tried to ask him, you know, what'd he say to you? And he's like, yeah, I can't tell you that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool that, you know, because we've never seen Freddie Swain mad, but he was like, hey, that's my guy, man.
Good for him. I like it. All right, coming up, will the illusion of complexity finally emerge for this Seahawks offense against the Saints? We'll get deeper into that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will turn you over to Game 4 of the ALCS. I guess go Red Sox. I guess that's what we're saying, right?
Sure.
With very little passion behind it.
Getting the crud out of the ball.
Yeah. Do that. So that's coming up at the top of the hour as Dave and I get prepared to go see the Foo Fighters tonight.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been any event at Climate Pledge, right? Any of any kind? Is this the christening?
Yeah, I think you guys are first.
We are going to be there for the christening of the building, the first time the sound system gets used in that way, and, you know, place is packed.
The first time the ticket person checks out our ticket.
Dave is very stressed about the ticket situation.
You know they're there. It's physically on your phone.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
I'm not
so sure that you won't, you know, delete it on your way there. But
Don't say that to him.
He's already stressed. Not even going to touch it.
Just think about the food. Hey, how about those food options?
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to have as far as food and that kind of thing goes. I just long for the days with paper tickets.
Dave just wants to be able to get us in the door, wherever our seats are, and then we're good.
Yeah.
Then we can worry about food.
Just throw your phone at the guy. Yeah, they're on here somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you find him, smart guy.
Yeah, I was telling Dave, since this is the first event, I could see him handing the phone to somebody going, yeah, I don't know, let's get Tommy on the horn here, and they call the walkie-talkie and get this guy over here. They don't know how to deal with it. They haven't been faced with this problem yet.
Hey, man, I've had a couple of moments like this at stadiums, you know, over the last couple months. I told you the story about in Vegas, where nobody knew where the press elevator was.
Oh, yeah.
I was walking around for like 45 minutes.
Working up a sweat before the broadcast.
Yeah. And I said something very, like, tame on the air. Like, it took me like 45 minutes to find the, you know, some of us from the Seattle media. I get from Calabro this scorching, what the heck are you whining about this? And I'm like, sheesh. I barely mentioned it. So there was that. Then going over to T-Mobile when my tickets magically disappeared. And Mike had – Lefko had me all coached up.
Yeah.
Everything. And for some reason, I think it was one of the ticket takers was trying to help me.
And they messed with it.
Messed with it.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen tonight, Bob.
You didn't have those problems with physical tickets, Dave.
You sure did.
You just had a ticket. You handed it to them. They'd rip off the stub, hand it back to you. Yeah. Have a great night.
Hold on to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Little souvenir, something, nothing. Got nothing. These newfangled gadgets.
My goodness.
We're going to go see the Foo Fighters tonight.
Sweet.
Hopefully they play some of their DGs. That's what they call that record.
Or you'll see the parking lot when the tickets don't load. No, I'm sorry.
we'll sit in the car and play Foo Fighters songs.
Yeah.
That's what we'll do.
Yeah, you said they were playing some Bee Gees songs.
Well, they did a record. They just released a record that has, you know, all Bee Gees. They call themselves the DGs. But it's all like very, very literal covers. They didn't really put their spin on it. They sound like the Bee Gees. And I think they got an Andy Gibb song in there as well. But it's really cool. I played some for you and Lefko this morning.
Sound just like the Bee Gees.
Yeah. Sounds great. I don't know if they'll play any of it, but it'd be kind of cool if they did. So anyway, we're preparing for that. Meanwhile, I asked you this question very early in the show. And that is just sort of based on Geno having some experience under his belt now. And you're going up against a defense which is very good against the run so far. Do you expect that we're going to see the offense look much different than what it's been so far this year? Which, by the way, to me, has not looked that much different than it did last year, just visually. I know it was much more productive at the beginning of last year. It was on a ridiculous pace. But just in terms of how it looks, do you think we're looking at the same offense we just saw?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that we haven't really seen everything that this offense can be just yet. I mean, you know, they've gotten... And I haven't seen like the fly sweep, and really, you were talking about this during the break about Eskridge, and that's a shame because that really opens things up for you. But you know, there's the fly sweep, you run that, then all of a sudden you fake the fly sweep, and then you have a running play that goes the other way. Then you fake the fly sweep, you know, fake the handoff and throw a screen to the other side. We haven't gotten to that progression, I feel like, and you know, they just haven't had a chance to like set those plays up, because that's kind of what you do, I think, as a play caller. You have an idea of where you want to go and how you want to kind of fool this defense. You know, you want to set it up with this play, and then they think you're going to do it again. Then you do, you know, something off of that that's different. I guess we've seen, like, if you went through and looked at all of the plays, you would probably be able to, you know, cut clips and put all that together. But
right.
We haven't seen it, you know, on a drive or, you know, it all at the same time or even in the same half. So I think that there's still a lot more to come out of this offense. But I got to say, man, I mean, I know a lot of it was running, but I felt like Geno had a pretty good understanding. You know, like I mentioned, or I asked you this question earlier, is did you ever see him like panicked or freaking out or, you know, not knowing what he's doing or tapping his helmet or, you know, having to call a timeout or them getting any penalties or anything like that? I mean, it might have been here and there, but I feel like he is really in charge of this deep offense. I think he's running it pretty well, especially for a backup.
Yeah, he certainly is not lacking confidence or looking uncertain of what he's doing out there. My biggest complaints to this point were, yeah, the fumble was a little rough, and we played that cut from Pete where he just kind of flat out blamed him, said, yeah, he was very, very careless with the ball. Here's what he said about it.
He was competing his tail off. He was calm. He was poised. He was in control. I mean, he handled everything really well and throughout the whole thing. And he was so upset that it comes down and he loses the football right at the end there, you know. And really, you know, when you look right at it, Geno had terrible ball security as he ducked up in there. I mean, we don't let anybody run with the football like that, and he'll see it. You know, he had the ball like he's carrying, you know, a loaf of bread, like they say, you know, and he got knocked out. They can knock it out anyway, but we don't ever, you know, don't ever want to look like that. And so, unfortunately, you know, that got us, but he gave us a chance, you know.
Terrible ball security. You don't ever want to run with the ball like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he said we don't let anybody run with the ball like that.
Like carrying a loaf of bread. And
well, I mean
that's that was crucial. That hurt. And he took a couple of sacks that were big ones. Like, man, just you got to throw the ball away. Outside of that, he's for a guy who's a backup, I don't have a big issue with anything he's done outside of those couple of moments. Now, obviously the fumble is a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of negates anything you may have done up to that point because it had such a tremendous impact on the final result. But for a backup that hasn't played in years, out there as a starter. Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, well, and like I said, I just my criticism of him is it's not what it would be of if Russell had done that.
Right.
You know, I mean, because he's a backup. I mean, that and same thing with the defense, you know, because I'm looking at the defense and they gave up 20 points in regulation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was somewhat of an improvement.
All right, that does it for us. I want to thank our guests today, Mark Schlereth, John Clayton, Jason Myers, and El Hombre, Michael Bradley. If you missed any of that, you know where to find it, 710sports.com. Just click the podcast tab and scroll down to our picture. Click on that. Everything you missed is waiting there for you each and every day. Coming up, Game 4 of the ALCS. Stay tuned for that. We're back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.